Victor. All back from constituency work over the weekend. This is actually a very important meeting where we will be dealing with the renewed fiscal framework as tabled by the Minister of Finance last Tuesday in the National Assembly. Appropriations will also be dealing with that part regarding the amendments to the Division of Revenue that will be dealt with next week. Welcome to everyone present, Co-Chair Mataba Mufamadi, and the members of the Standing and the Select Committee for Finance in the NA and the NCOP. The MTBBS and the review of the fiscal framework was tabled in an uncertain and actually a volatile global context. That's the picture we are facing. But within the global context, we've got our own challenges to deal with unemployment, poverty, and low growth. But also a given fact is that we have sound financial fundamentals supporting growth and fiscal sustainability. And this coming weekend, a very important meeting will take place in France, where countries of the world sit around a table to address the global challenges. How to get a bigger growth, how to get more jobs for people, and how to give hope for people at grassroots level. And the inputs that's going to be made here today by the different organizations in terms of the public participation is part of that whole exercise. That's how important this meeting is. Welcome again to everyone. I received apologies from Honorable Mashile. He is writing exams. Honorable Mashashiwe and Honorable Makubela. Honorable Makubela is on sick leave, as well as the Honorable Luyenge and Ntetwa. Thank you. That is the apologies. Four organizations indicated that they will make presentations to the committee today. And first on the agenda is the South African Creative Renewal Community. Creative is a positive word and renewal is also a positive word. So maybe you've got a positive message for us. So welcome, are you alone? Please introduce yourself.
Yes. Good morning, everyone. My name is Mr. Gabriel Ray. I will do a presentation as it is written down on a hard copy, which is available from the gentleman who is distributing it.
Mr. Chairman, can I just on a point of order?
Yes.
I've read the letter from Mr. Ray. Clearly, he's asking for funding on work related to COP17. Now, can I just maybe ask him, if that is the case, this is the wrong forum.
Yes. Can I?
Yes, sir.
Yes. The letter which was sent is not part of this submission. What we have in front of us here is part of an extensive program that has been on the ground for, let me say, 21 years. It is this work which has built up over a good number of years, which has reached a point where we are able to exploit it as intellectual property. So it is not about COP17. It is about exploiting intellectual property which enables us to create work opportunity in the creative industries as well as in the broadcasting sector. So the letter which the gentleman is passing, or rather presenting, or hard copies which I have in front of me, I do not know if that is perhaps the letter that you're referring to. But that is the essence of the submission.
Mr. Chairman, you know, maybe it was a mistake on behalf of our secretariat, but this meeting is about this document. You need to comment on the medium-term policy statement made last week by the Minister of Finance and to influence this committee to compile a report for Parliament, adopted by Parliament eventually, on the fiscal framework. So in terms of that, if you're not dealing with this, we can assist you, and we've tried to assist you, and we can direct you to the correct committee. But if you don't deal with this, you are at the wrong forum.
Yes. Well,
can you give us clarity?
Yes. Well, in a way, it is. I do understand. I'm not responding directly to the presentation of the Minister of Finance on the medium-term budget policy framework. What I am doing, however, is operating within the context as presented by the chairperson of the committee, and that is presenting to the committee what is happening on the ground. That is a fundamental element and fundamental aspect of what we are dealing with in our society, because it has to come from the ground up. You know, job creation has to happen from the ground up. So in everything that the minister has presented, whatever we are presenting is in fact part of that.
Sir, the advertisement indicated very clearly that today's hearings is on the revised fiscal framework.
Yes.
Now next week there's also public hearings on the amendments to the division of revenue.
Yes.
That is the actual budget where more money has been allocated to the different departments, to provinces and local government, to municipalities. So I just want to give you the clarity what this meeting is about. It's about the fiscal framework.
I see.
The borrowing, the deficits, how are we going to deal with that?
I see.
That's what this meeting is about. Otherwise, you must come next week to the appropriations hearings.
Mm. No,
if you want to speak on the budget.
Yes, I understand that. I'm well aware of that. From this point onwards then, perhaps that is what we should do. I must make it clear that I just saw it as an opportunity as well, you know, for us to present another perspective, another view, but considering that we are dealing here with the macroeconomy, the macro strokes of the economy, yes, I do understand. Yeah.
But you are very welcome to the hearings next Wednesday and Thursday on appropriations.
Okay.
And we are dealing specific with the budget. And one of the co-chairs is sitting there, the Honourable Chani.
Fine.
But we received your documentation. We're not going to push it aside.
Okay.
But you are welcome at that hearings in terms of what you prepared.
Okay, no, that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
But you're welcome to stay the whole meeting to listen to the other inputs being made.
Okay, excellent.
Thank you. That deals with that. Yes, Alice. Busa is here. I see Professor Parsons. He's always present. Professor Parsons, welcome. You can come to the fore, to the front. All the members, that's the presentation you must have in front of you, Busa. A new one. The hard copy has just been distributed. Professor, welcome. You can introduce that good lady to us, and then you can zoom into your presentation.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. Thank you very much for this opportunity to make a submission on behalf of Business Unity South Africa on, if I may use shorthand and call it the mini budget instead of spelling it out in full. We do welcome this opportunity. You have before you a hard and more extended version of our submission. What I thought, Chair, I would do a shorter presentation, lifting out some of the highlights so that we can leave more time for an exchange of views. Chair, perhaps I should echo at the outset your remarks in which you emphasized the importance of the forthcoming G20 meeting. I think to the extent that what we're grappling with, both from a domestic point of view and a global point of view, to the extent that hinges on better global cooperation and coordination, especially under present circumstances, this is a particularly important G20 meeting, and also your reference to the issues of volatility. Also, as you will see from the agenda of that meeting, of the G20 meeting, occupy a very important part of that agenda. Chair, to turn to our domestic situation and to the mini-budget, let me say that as a point of departure, as you'll have seen from the comments last week, that from the business perspective, from the market perspective, there was a positive response to the mini-budget and its basic message. I think it's accepted by business that, as you indicated in your own opening remarks, we are operating under a very uncertain global situation, a very volatile global situation, of which the outcomes are not yet entirely clear. And so that has important consequences for how we can cushion the South African economy, or alternatively how we need to adapt to those realities that we cannot change as a result of the global situation. And so what has been embodied in our view in the mini budget has been a series of trade-offs which are important to be taken at this point in time. And you will see that in the main document they are listed, the trade-offs between the external environment and the internal environment, between the present and the future, between, in fact, consumption and investment. These are all trade-offs, and that's what a budget, whether it's a mini-budget or the main budget, is all about. And I think what, in our view, the Minister and the National Treasury have sought to do is to try and convey a measure of adaptability and flexibility in how we can and should respond to the changing circumstances with which we are faced. But the bottom line was that From an overall point of view, Chair and members of the committee, we found the message of the mini budget was one that was indeed very positive for business confidence, and in all the talks and debates we've had within Bursa since then, I think that has been reflected, that it shows good management of a difficult external and a challenging internal situation. Another issue is, of course, that we were already embarked on a counter-cyclical policy that we've been able to maintain thanks to the earlier prudence in our approach, and to try and strike a balance between what we have to do from a counter-cyclical point of view on the one hand, and what we need to address from a structural point of view in the longer term. And the important point that we think in Bursa has to come through in our debates around these issues is, firstly, let us focus on the factors over which we have control rather than spend too much time over the factors over which we cannot have much control. The G20 certainly is an opportunity to address some of those external factors, but we really, to use the phrase, it's more appropriate now than ever before to think global, but act local. And the other important point, of course, is the extent to which cooperation with the private sector is one of the major pillars in seeking the outcomes that we want. Now, the outcomes we want, Chair, as you will have seen from the budget statement, does hinge on forecasting, perhaps to a greater extent than ever before. And we know from what's happened in the South African economy during the course of this year, even before the global crisis started, or at least the second global crisis started, that we were slowing down, that there were mixed signals coming from the recovery that we were expecting this year. So I think all the main players, including, I think, the National Treasury, felt a point had been reached in the second half of the year where you had to revisit your forecasts in the light of the external and internal trend. And so there was, to some extent, a convergence of thinking, as you will have seen if you look at the numbers, Chair, in the mini-budget, and our numbers, that is the Booster numbers, over the next 4 years, more or less the same, 3.1 for this year, as compared with, we also had the forecast of 3.4, which the minister had in February. There were some others that were more optimistic. We saw ones of 3.7 and even 4%, but one felt even in February that was probably too optimistic. So there's been a scaling down for this year, which is virtually passed anyway, from 3.4 in the National Treasury and in Booster to 3.1 next year, 3.5 in our view, slightly higher than the government forecast, but the same for 2013 and the same, and 4.2, a slight change. These are all based, of course, Chair, on certain assumptions and are subject to an assessment of the balance of risks internally and externally. And the point we would like to make is that it's very interesting, we're in a phase now, both internationally and globally, where the risks of forecasting are quite high. I mean, even your best forecasts, you ask yourself, well, what are the chances that might go wrong? And I think we need to bear that in mind. This, in turn, of course, also flows into the fiscal options that are available to a country like South Africa, and it's quite clear from the mini-budget that the key factor is growth, real growth, and that your options expand or contract depending on your assessment of where you will be in a year or two's time in regard to your growth performance. So we need to assess these risks, and certainly we think that the mini-budget, which obviously is focusing on the spending side over the next 3 years, has done a realistic job. We think there's still the balance of risks to be assessed, and we would certainly think at this stage it's unwise to talk about raising any taxes at this point, this delicate point in the business cycle. Chair, to move on then, you will see in the document that we certainly applaud the fact that we showed foresight in being able to enter both the 2008 global crisis and the current one in a much stronger position than many other countries. And that has paid off extremely well. We accept the fact that given the negative impact of a weakening growth rate, we would have to push out the deadline for being able to bring our net debt down to 40%. But as far as Busa and the business community in general are concerned, that's very acceptable. It doesn't send out any negative signals. Of course, we have emphasized that one important factor that has been mentioned by the Minister of Finance is that as we look ahead, we must be in a position to be able to control consumption expenditure by government, especially its salary and wage bill. Otherwise, that could prove to be a difficulty in the years ahead if some of our assumptions are not borne out. In other words, the margin for error has shrunk. The margin for error in forecasts has enlarged, but the margin for error in your policies has shrunk. Must try and make quite sure that we maintain that careful balance. Now, Chair, if I could turn against that background then to some of the more specific issues, the issues of poverty, unemployment, inequality, which set a large part of the framework of how we design and craft our budgets. And to focus, if I may, Chair, in this presentation on just a couple of points. Firstly, in regard to job creation and, in fact, job retention, let me draw your attention firstly that very fortunately, once again, we have the new growth path process. I must emphasize that the new growth path is a process. It's not an event. It has been underway for a year. And there are a number of issues which have been resonating in the budget, which in fact also resonate in the discussions and decisions under the new growth path process. And you will have seen even yesterday the latest accord that's been signed on local procurement. That was preceded by two other accords, one on skills development and one on basic education. This is a process of cooperation between the public and private sectors with other stakeholders, including labor and the community, under the NEDLAC umbrella to ensure that we seek to maximize the number of jobs we can create at any given growth rate, whether it's 3% or 5%. So those issues such as local procurement, the jobs fund, where there was also reference to that in the mini-budget, we support that. We are playing an important part in ensuring that these applications are made, and we also support the issue of the wage subsidy, which is being discussed in NEDLAC at the moment. We don't think we must get a move on with that. We mustn't let the best be the enemy of the good. It's not a complete answer, but it's part of the answer, and we should now start to bring it towards finalization. The next issue, which we think is important, and we like the title because it brings home the message that we need to bring home, and that is the Competitiveness Support Fund. We think it's very aptly named because we think that business too must understand this is not rent-seeking. This is to make them more competitive and able to create more jobs. So we certainly are involved in that as business, and we think that enterprise development, especially small and emerging business, is at the heart of what we want to do in terms of growth and development, and we are certainly addressing that also. That will probably be, Chair and members of the committee, probably the next accord. The next two accords under the new growth path will probably, I cannot speak for the minister, but from what I know of our participation, the next two probably on the agenda are the Green Economy Accord and the Enterprise Development Accord, which will seek to pull together several of these mechanisms in order to promote small and emerging business. Then the next important area, Chair, and we think this is perhaps fundamental to our ability to cushion what is happening globally and to grow internally, is the whole issue of infrastructure, where quite clearly there's been a lag, which was pointed out by the minister. I mean, not only a lag in the sense that we should have done something sooner, it's also that even where we have budgeted the money, we have not done it yet. So we have quite a bit of catch-up to do. And it certainly needs to be expedited, as it is lagging behind its budget allocation. And you know, of course, that President Zuma has recognized this as an important mechanism to support the economy, to create growth, and to create jobs. And there is a presidential infrastructural coordinating commission to try and pull this together in a more effective way, in a more coordinated way. We would only make the point here that, which I'll come back to perhaps at a later, I better deal with it now, the issue of administered prices. Now, we all want better infrastructure, better roads, better ports, a better transport system. We want the lights to stay on. But, Chair, I think the problem is that we just need to plan the financing of how we finance this infrastructure much better, because at the moment you're getting a bunching up and a serious cumulative effect of port charges, and of course the electricity charges and the water tariffs. What is happening is it's undermining the costs of doing business. As much as you're giving subsidies on one hand, they're being eroded by the fact that the power costs have soared. Now, of course, it's not so easy to find the answer because this happened rather quickly. It's been a convergence. But we do need to revisit this quite seriously as to how we fix these tariffs, what is the formula, and the issue of affordability. I mean, just, you know, so another example is the issue of toll roads. How they were to be financed should have been discussed at a much earlier stage and more consensus built around how that should, I mean, that's just one example. But now there's some other examples that are all catching up. So the issue of administered prices is really quite a serious challenge to our ability to get this economy to grow more rapidly, to create jobs more rapidly, and also to ensure that we don't suffer from a cost inflation which makes monetary policy difficult or means that you can't bring down interest rates further. So the next issue which flows from this, Chair, and it's a very important issue, you notice that in our written document we've probably devoted the longest part of our document to it, because we think that the issue of public-private sector partnerships does need to be lifted out in a very visible way. Up until now, PPPs have been very marginal in expediting our infrastructural development. And we need, if the challenge is what we think it is, and as it has been outlined by the Minister of Finance, we simply have to use all the available mechanisms to expedite the spending on infrastructure, especially at the local level. You will know that the Minister had some very specific comments. And that means that the private sector really must be mobilized more effectively under the umbrella or under the framework of PPPs in order to get that delivery and get that outcome. And I want to just show you, because I took the opportunity to, we have done some research which I can make available at a later stage to the committee, to look globally. I mean, how do we compare with other comparable economies in the use of, you know, PPPs? And I thought, well, we should look at the BRIC countries. That might be a good point of departure. And you can see there from that we're really at the bottom of the scale. We spent on average 0.6% of our annual GDP between 1994 and 2010, while countries like India spent 1.1, Brazil 0.8, and of course India 1.1, and Thailand 1.1 over that period. And then the next one just puts it in an easier way to absorb, and you'll see that really we're lagging behind all of them. Is it a magic wand? No, it's not a magic wand, but it could make a big difference to a certain proportion of our infrastructure if we could apply our minds in a streamlined way so that we have a framework within which we know where there is a role for the PPEs, on what basis should they operate, where will they be most successful, what are the obstacles, either in the private sector or the public sector, so that we have certainty and predictability, so we can mobilize that mechanism much more effectively than we've obviously been able to do so far. And if that means we have to think outside the box, then so be it. Chair, the next issue which we've lifted out, and of course I think you'll appreciate that when we look at the mini-budget, it may be called a mini-budget, but it's a major speech and it covers a lot of things. I've only sought on behalf of BUSA to lift out a couple of points. The next is the green economy, where we support what has been done to move towards a more environmental friendly society and economy, and we realize that it does require government support and government action which is crafted in a clever way to change behavior, either through the carrot or the stick, as the case may be. The important point is to get the sequence right. Do you first use the stick and then the carrot, or do you first use the carrot and then the stick? That's a big debate. But we do need, as a developing country, to take a balanced view, to come back to the philosophy of the mini-budget. We must take a balanced view of what we can do and what we cannot do. The importance, of course, that, once again, there are some aspects of climate change which reside on the global agenda and which we must push and which which I no doubt think we will push through our leadership of the COP17 conference at the end of this month in Durban, and business will be playing quite an important role. I might just mention in this regard, as I said earlier, Chair, that the issues of the green economy will also feature in the new growth path discussions, and we're expecting that there is already a draft call which is being circulated and which we hope might or might not be finalized before the end of the year or early in the new year. Chair, let me perhaps then conclude along the following lines. I think, as you will see from the hard copy, where we expand a little bit on what are the main conclusions that we are drawing here. I mean, quite clearly, the mini budget, the main budget in February, or other key policy decisions which lie outside the budget or lie in other ministries, are aimed, together with the stakeholders such as labour and business, whether through NEDLAC or indeed outside NEDLAC, we all are committed. We want an economy which is bigger, that's why we want it to grow, we want it to be stronger, so we want to be sure that we're financially stable, we've got the reserves, which we have, and better, that it serves the people of the country better in terms of poverty alleviation, employment, and inequality. We're saying that in terms of the immediate response to the money budget, there are just three or four thoughts we'd like to leave with you in conclusion. First is, and foremost, is we must sustain the present economic recovery. It must not falter. And we must ensure that we support what needs to be done in order to get our 3.1% and our 3.5% and so forth that we projected. We must underpin those expectations with the means at our disposal. The second is we must not, as the new growth path, and I think the mere fact it's called a new growth path means that growth is actually quite important. All roads now lead through your growth performance. And you will notice that in the budget language, if the GDP changes, all other ratios change as well. So that's very important that we now, as the Minister of Finance has himself said, we are doing what we have to do, not only to sustain this recovery, but to enlarge our growth potential. That's why we need to look down the track and see what are the structural issues that need to be addressed, whether it's the balance between consumption and investment in the public sector, what does the private sector do, etc., to enlarge our growth potential, to get it up to 5, 6, and 7%, and to remove the constraints that prevent us. Those with good memories will remember, when did we last grow at 5%? In 2007. And what happened? The lights went out. So quite clearly, there is a great need, and that's why infrastructure becomes so important, to make sure that the lights don't go out, that the exports do get out of the ports. And the other of those factors that are needed to make this economy deliver and perform better, that we want to maximize the number of jobs that are created at any given growth rate, whether 3%, 4% or 5%, want to maximize the number of jobs, and particularly the youth unemployment. I think you probably know as much about that as I do, and we know that is an enormous challenge, both in the short term and in the longer term. And that's part of the structural review of this economy on how to make it more employment-friendly, especially for the youth. Perhaps the most overarching message, which came through in the mini-budget, so it's not said in a spirit of criticism or negativity, but I think some of the members of this committee may have heard me say before, and I think it's been echoed by some others, that if we could factor talking into our gross domestic product, we'd be the fastest growing economy in the world. We really need now to move against the background of the main budget, the mini budget, and other policy decisions to implement what it is we've said we would do, what we've agreed to do, to deliver on what we have said to do, where the money has been budgeted and is either unspent or returned, that has to cease. So we've got to walk the talk. If that was one message that certainly business divined from the money budget, was that the Minister of Finance has said, we must make it happen. With the resources that we have, we must deploy them more successfully, and we must deploy them effectively. And that at the end of the day, the success here, Chair, although we talk about a money budget, we know that it has important implications, and it's a vital curtain raiser for the main budget, that at the end of the day, the cooperation of the key stakeholders, labour and business in particular, but also others, is absolutely essential to ensure that we can achieve the potential and unlock the potential that this economy has, given the adversities globally. But as the Minister himself has said, I know it's a cliche, we say it often, in every threat there is an opportunity. But that's not just rhetoric. We are in a good position to identify new opportunities, whilst at the same time seeking to cushion ourselves against any negative factors that are currently affecting our economic performance. So, in a nutshell, therefore, Chair and members of the committee, the message of BUSA is really that we need to proceed along those lines and implement rapidly what is agreed, what has been funded, and what we need to ensure will provide outcomes for the man on the street, for the unemployed, and for the poor in a tangible way. So the end of the line really is implement, implement, implement. And if we have to think outside the box in order to succeed, then that's what we should do. Thank you.
Professor Parsons, representing BUSA, thank you very much for that presentation and the views. Yes, and we must bear in mind our own region, Africa, as Europe is getting together this weekend. What are we going to do about Africa and infrastructure? Honourable members, there's an opportunity to engage with this presentation, questions of clarity, etc. I know Dr. George, Mr. Marais, Kornoff, Mates, Chani, Kamini, in that honorable lease, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Professor Parsons, for your comprehensive and, as always, useful analysis. Professor, you mentioned that we should focus on the factors over which we have control. And you also mentioned that the medium-term budget policy statement was positively received by business. Now, there is a view that government could do much more to accelerate economic activity and thus growth in the economy. Was there anything in the medium-term budget policy statement that you would like to have seen the minister focus on or mention but didn't? You also mentioned that you agree with the growth, the projected growth for this year and over the medium term. It clearly isn't fast enough to absorb unemployment or, you know, make any inroads in the vast unemployment problem we have in South Africa. Do you think that government action can be taken to accelerate this growth rate? And then finally, in your conclusion, you suggest that government needs to collaborate with the key stakeholders, including business. Is government doing this sufficiently now, or are you saying that government needs to collaborate more with business? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Prof. It's quite interesting submission from you. The first one is just on employment. I think you have said that, and many others have said that the private sector should be centered to job creation. But what we see at the moment is that it seems like government is the biggest employer at the moment. Their employment has increased, while it seems like, you know, business has decreased quite substantially. Are you happy with that trend that is happening at the moment? And what is your suggestions, how to turn that around and how to exponentially create jobs? And I would presume in the private sector, or are you happy that government is doing that? Just on following on what my colleague has said, that's about the GDP over the medium term. We have seen that some of the objectives of government is to fund 5 million jobs to be created by 2020. We have seen that the land reform process in terms of buying of land is there's quite a huge backlog. And what I've read is that funding is the problem. We have seen from the national growth path that there's an enormous lot of obligations to fund that process, as you've said, that program. And then we are seeing now the intention of the National Health Insurance Scheme. Are you of the opinion that 3.1 to 4.2% or 4.5% GDP is enough to fund that all? If not, what do you think, how should that be reprioritized? And what is that niche that should be lifted above everything else, that we can have a competitive edge? Because we haven't seen something that is typically South African that everybody in the world wants. How can we create that competitive edge to lift us above that 4% GDP towards, you know, what we need to fund all these obligations? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, Professor. You know, you have pleaded for more triple P's against the background that it was announced over the weekend, or just before the weekend, that it's been cancelled by the government. Now, I just want, I'm not so convinced that the triple P path we have embarked on will be eventually beneficial to the economy, maybe a changed one. Why I'm saying that is, if you look at the professional fees being asked by the triple P consortiums, it is just outrageously and very close to greed. I would like your comments on that. And then on the state wage bill, you know, it was not a... I think we've made a mistake with the state wage bill in trying to say that is also counter-cyclical and it's coming back to bite us now. But we have to deal with it. And I don't know whether there's any proposals you can make from Business South Africa side. What we have mooted with the minister was to say no increases in certain categories for the next 3 years. But if we do that, we're going to need Business South Africa to create the environment for us to do it, because we're all in this boat. So then we would like to see more active criticism coming from Business South Africa in terms of very high salaries in your sector, very high share options, very high bonuses paid out in the business sector. And while we're in that sort of environment, it becomes very difficult to convince the unions to do a deal with government in terms of the state wage bill. So I would like to have your comments on that.
Honourable Deshmarwe.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start by welcoming the presentation. Chair, you know, I can't agree more with what has been cited by the professor, that forecasting is one of the biggest challenges of late. Of course, with the declining or contracting revenue growth in most of the developing countries as a result of the global economy uncertainties and challenges facing Europe and U.S. is very difficult. And as a result, I find it very difficult for me to be optimistic about even our current projections, including the fact that we'll be able to stabilize on our national debt by 2014 and 2015, just as a comment. The triple P's effectiveness. You know, we have heard a lot about the failure of our current arrangement, but I think it's high time that we are more specific about what are the impediments, and also what is it that can be done differently to get our current triple P setup working. And I'll appreciate if Professor is able to give us some indication on exactly what is that is not working with our triple P setup, so as we can obviously get it up to the level of most of the BRIC community. And thirdly, Chair, what is it exactly that's, because it's very common, we know that we must walk the talk, but exactly what is it that is stopping us from walking the talk? I mean, how do we deal with these challenges that are making us not to walk the talk? Let's get to know the Buza's position on this one. And also, reinforcing on what has been asked by Honorable George on the need for increased collaboration with key stakeholders. Does that imply the current national consensus platform is not adequate? But also, if it's not adequate, what are the causes, and how must we deal with those? You know, does NetLag not effective, or is it not providing adequate space for the much desired collaboration? I think it is key for us to get to know exactly what is meant by this particular conclusion. Thank you, Chair.
Hello, Johnny.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'm largely covered by my colleagues, but just a comment and a question. Prof, I think, don't you think, I welcome your presentation and the fact that Busa agrees with government on a number of proposals as contained in the mini-budget. But, and I also appreciate the efforts and the engagement that business in this country is doing with government and all other stakeholders, including your engagements with Minister Patel and those at NetLag. But then the question is, don't you think it is about time that we begin now to elevate these discussions to a point where we see implementation? Because I've got a view that we have been in boardrooms for many years and nothing is coming out of that. To an extent that it is my perception that business in this country is working against government. You only agree in terms of the risk as they get identified, but you are very quiet as business in terms of the dangers that, in my view, again, are being created by business. The dangers of the increasing number of unemployment. Much as government is increasing the number of its employees and becoming the biggest employer in the country, business on the one hand is also accelerating in terms of making sure that it retrenches as many as possible people. And it's only government so far, including those affected, that are talking about the dangers of this growing soldier of the unemployed. And it is my perception that perhaps business is quiet about that. You are not concerned about that because it's quite easy for business to move elsewhere should the situation get out of hand and disinvest and leave this country with your monies intact and do business elsewhere where it is come. But if really business South Africa is keen and committed to addressing some of these challenges in the country, wouldn't it be more better to see that in practice in a way where we'll see you also increasing the number of jobs as opposed to shedding jobs like it is the case now? Coming forward, like, let's take a lousy example like the current Walmart thing. Not just Walmart is doing things, in my view, simply to be accepted in this country. But we don't hear business in this country saying, for the next years, we'll be opening this, we'll create so many jobs, we'll do this, we'll do this, we'll invest in terms of housing, this is how we are going to assist, in terms of transport, this is how. Everybody, the poor and the rich, are shouting at government to 1, 2, 3. Hence now, but the reality is that should anything, everything get out of hand, we are all going to be affected, and the poor will be more affected than the rich, because, like I said, in my view, it's always easy for the rich, the business people in this context, to move at any given point with their monies intact and go elsewhere. And those who cannot move will suffer the pain of whatever that can come out of the frustrations of those who are unemployed. Soon we'll see, we will begin to see matches increasing and all those stuff, which will affect. But I'm saying perhaps we need to be now talking a situation where business now, you come to the table with firm commitments from your side and implement, as opposed to keeping government busy in dialogue every day, every year, every week, every month. I no longer see how those are carrying us forward, except to continue to burden government. Your thoughts on those things?
Lamini, and then on the leash.
Thank you, Chair, and the co-chair. And thank you for the presentation, Prof. I've been covered by a previous honorable Korenov on the state wage bill, but however, though, I still have some few questions. Prof, you are indicating to us a very crucial point when you mention that there should be a cooperation from the private sector. And I think the BOSAC should be the one that is playing that role to assist that cooperation take off, get implemented, and get sustained. Now, having said that, what is the plan towards that? What is the plan towards ensuring that cooperation does have teeth, that cooperation is really engaged effectively, and if there are any mistakes between government and the private sector because of the model that is existing to date, something is being done on day to day because there is the cooperation, there is BOSAC between ourselves and the private sector. The other question, Honorable Chair, will be based on the basic principles that they were highlighted by the minister on his address when he was saying, which the BOSAC has mentioned, one of them is the counter-cyclicality, the second one being the debt sustainability, and the third one being the intergenerational equity. I can see that BOSAC is mainly focusing on the first one, which is counter-cyclicality. Now, you know, if you look at the debt sustainability, I don't think in the whole world, globally, there is a country which is able to implement or to sustain its debt without the assistance of the private sector. Now, because the private sector is like the husband and the wife, you will see that the recovery of the tax revenue, it plays such a crucial role towards the debt sustainability. Now, what is the role, what is the planning, what is the model within the BOSAC, even within that boardrooms, the discussions that take place, so as to motivate and persuade companies to ensure that they pay the tax at the right time? Nobody is forging tax laws that are there. What is your strike plan towards that? You have also mentioned another critical point, Prof, about planning on the infrastructure investment. And on that, you are saying a consensus needs to be reached. Now I'm getting an interpretation in my mind which says, somehow, somewhere, government gets involved into these bulk infrastructure investments without proper consultation or without proper planning or without whatever, but there is some loophole. Can you be specific about that loophole so that as a committee, we are able to charge our function as an oversight? We are committees of the parliament. At the end of the day, executives, they account to the parliament. And the BUSA being there on behalf of the business environment, they are the ones to inform the parliament about these loopholes so that we are able to manage them. I think, Chair, that's what we are requesting the BUSA to do for us. My colleagues, they've covered me with the triple P's, but I just want to add one point where Prof says it has been marginal. Triple P's has been marginal. What is that? What was the model? What were the loopholes within? I think Comrade Fandor partly covered me there, but I still want to know if you're saying it was marginal. You know, marginally, you'd expect a student maybe to like a prof, you'll expect a student to pass aggregate to be 85%. And what was the marginal? Was it your 45% or 35%? So that's the specification I'm referring to. The last one, Honorable Chair. The BUSA, if you're looking at the trading trends that are happening within our country, and we're talking about the economic growth, our economic growth will be boosted by the trading trends that are happening within ourselves and the partners, the foreign countries. And what is happening to date, we're seeing South Africa mainly focusing on the exports, copper, gold, that's what is happening. And as a result, that's why there is so much retrenchment within the companies because of these exports. Does the BUSA have anything in place, a strategy in place to change or to propose to the government the other alternative trading trends that can be taken by our government so as to ensure that we create more jobs, we alleviate poverty, and we achieve inequality within our country? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Zamidi. Honourable Leaf.
Stephen, through you to Professor Parsons, thank you for being with us this morning. Many questions have already been asked, but I get a sense that BUSA is indicating to us that you're happy with the mini-budget, but it needs to be implemented and we need to talk to you more, being the considerations that I pick up, rather than issues with the kind of questions that have been coming from the floor. And if that is the case, then it does concern me somewhat. For instance, if one looks at the projected growth, I mean, it's not going to get us anywhere. And I don't believe we should be wringing our hands, and we don't believe we should be wringing our hands and saying the situation in the world is so bad, we can't do better than that. We should be looking at how we can do better than that. And is BUSA saying to this committee that we can't do better than that? And if it's not saying that, then how can we do better than that? In terms of the employment situation, Honourable Kronoff has pointed out that this is clearly not countercyclical, particularly with regard to the regulations that govern employment in this country today. Now, surely that must be something BUSA should be addressing in terms of the high proportion of the budget now going into paying salaries and wages. How does one deal with that in the future?
you simply can't lay off people and employ them and lay them off when you feel like it. It just doesn't happen like that. And consequently, you have the move over the last 10 years or so for commerce and industry to reduce employment as much as possible. Now, is there no comment from Bursa about the difficulty with employment? Mr. Chairman, the question of Bursa and small and emerging businesses, Professor Parsons quite rightly emphasizes the importance of small and emerging businesses. But in my constituency work, and I'm a simple constituency MP from Newcastle, businesses out there feel they have no connection to Bursa at all, and particularly the smaller businesses. And so is there something that Bursa should be doing to connect more to these? Because if you're going to be speaking in NEDLAC and other fora on behalf of these, then there needs to be, I think, some more collaboration at that level. Now, moving on with the collaboration, is Bursa suggesting that and the question's been asked about the degree of collaboration already taken place, but is Bursa suggesting that collaboration should take the place of Parliament? In other words, that agreements are forged outside of Parliament and they come to Parliament for rubber stamping? Because that's the kind of sense I'm getting. Participation and collaboration is vital. No one's going to argue that. But ultimately, the debate must take place in Parliament and in these committees, not outside of. And so I wonder where Bursa stands on that. So if the collaboration takes place and the debate comes back to Parliament, and would you expect Parliament then to implement, and that's been a key word this morning, implement what is agreed, inverted commas, outside of Parliament? Mr. Chairman, I think I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much.
It's a mouthful, Professor. You need Solomon's wisdom to address that. Right?
Well, Chair, with your permission, I think there are some common threads running through
yes.
these questions. So if I may group them, I think that would help quite a bit, because they do seem to fall under certain headings. Let me, not necessarily in order of importance, but perhaps to start with the macro and end with the micro. I think the point being made that this country can do better, well, that is the burden of our message, and it's been the burden of what we've been saying to government and to various cabinet ministers and in the other fora in which we are represented. I would just say that in response to those who have put the challenge on the table, yes, but what precisely do you want? What do you want different? It would save time, Chair. We did produce a few months ago a Bursa document on perspectives on an inclusive, higher job-rich growth path for South Africa by 2025. I think it would assist this committee quite considerably if I organized, when I got back to the office, that we send it to you electronically, and I think it will, may not answer all the questions, but it'll tell you where we stand on some of these issues. The issue of the labor market, the issue of being competitive, the issue of how to address poverty. Can we learn from what other countries have done more successfully in being able to address poverty? It's all in here, which shows that those issues are on the business agenda. They may not have always been visible, but they are. So I think, Chair, that would help. I will deal with some of the other issues, but I think that would help, and if you could make a note of that, please. The next issue, I think, is the issue of collaboration. I think the message is you can always cooperate more. I think there are a number of structures where we are cooperating, whether it's NEDLAC or through New Growth Path, and I think perhaps to some extent, the implications of this process of the new growth path are not fully understood by everyone, because in fact under that resides a number of these issues where indeed, as you will see when you say, but show me, well, I can show you a skills accord, I can show you a basic education accord, I can show you only yesterday a very important local procurement accord, all in the past few months, tangible outcomes of a social dialogue process. I would only make the point, Chair, social dialogue does not govern the country. It helps to keep it governable. Ultimately, the decisions must rest with Parliament. So the two must work together. The third point is on the public-private sector partnerships. Let me say this. I fully agree that this whole thing has not really enjoyed the thrust it should. Now, there is, and perhaps this is a hearing which this committee may wish to promote. There is a structure, as you may know, in the National Treasury called the PPP unit, which has been there for some time. And within its limited framework, it has done some good work. But I think the time, I think what we're saying as business is that given the challenges we're facing on the infrastructural side, given the challenges of delivery, can we have a fresh look at are we deploying the PPPs as effectively as we should? I don't want to go into the announcement last week. That's just that, because I think that it rather suggests that what is lacking is an effective broad framework, the rules of the game. What are the rules of the game? And so that you don't have these recriminations, no, but the pricing is all wrong. Well, maybe the pricing was wrong, but the fact is, where in the framework does that fit? And so I think it's very important that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, Chair. We simply say, look, it's been somewhat ad hoc, it's been marginal, but let's have a look at what lessons we've learned. And then how do we create a framework within which we can successfully and without recrimination deploy that mechanism to get delivery? In other words, let's be problem-solving about it, because it is a global mechanism. And we are just not using it either on the scale or as effectively as some other countries who are in a comparable position to ourselves. So I think the plea from Busa is to revisit this and maybe interrogate where we are, find out what we've learnt, what the National Treasury has learnt through its experience, and then how do we build on that to make more successful use of it in future. The next issue, I think, is the issue of growth and employment. Well, I think the burden of what we're saying, the fact that we're forecasting 3.1 and 3.5 doesn't mean to say we're happy with it. We're just saying that's the reality on which we need to build. The Minister of Finance has said we have an aspirational goal of 7% per annum. I think Busa shares that aspirational goal. We're not there yet, but that's where we have to get if we want to make a difference. And it is when you're facing these challenges that you realize how important that growth is. Not in itself, as we say in our main document, it's not the final word, but you try and do some things without growth, without the tax revenue, without the room to maneuver. I must share with you a little story, Chair. It's a year or two ago, I had a Chinese economist come to see me. He wanted to talk about Southern Africa and South Africa. But before I could talk about it, he said, I must tell you, you don't understand. We have a runaway train in China. We're growing at 9, 10%. It's creating huge problems. What do we do? I said, give me that problem. Give me a problem of managing 10% growth. Of course, there are problems. But give me that and try to get 3 up to 7. It is a huge challenge. So we sort of joked. I said, well, you can second me to Beijing and you can come here and you can give us advice, respectively. So, Chair, it is a big challenge. And it's absolutely right that unless we respond to the goal which both President Zuma and the Minister of Finance have stated more than once, that our aspirational goal is 7%. At 3%, we cannot do all the things we want to do. And that is, but we need to implement what we've already decided to do. That's also quite an important part. And I think the issue here is coming to implementation. It is the issue that we do need to think outside the box on how to expedite implementation. Otherwise, it just becomes a casualty of bureaucratic structures. Decisions are taken and they can't be implemented quickly. And the symptom of that was in the mini-budget, where the minister himself said the money's being returned. It's unspent. And that's still not a signal that we need to look very critically and interrogate our implementation mechanisms, our decision making, and if necessary, mobilize the partners you need to make it happen. And I think that's another point that I'd like to make. On the issue of executive pay, it was a passing reference which I anticipated, because quite rightly, it is said there is a reciprocal debate needed in the private sector on the issue of executive pay. What I can say is that debate is now underway under the new growth path, because it's part of the new growth path, and some work is being done in the private sector. And we will be, no doubt, making some kind of official response at a later stage. Chair, the other point I'd like to just... I spoke earlier about Africa, or at least I mentioned the Chinese economist, but just also to remind me that I think that's where business has to start saying to itself, and indeed is saying to itself, once you take a view on how long the global crisis will last, I think that's very important. How long do you think it'll last? Because if it's short-term, then you take one set of decisions. If it's long-term, you must make some structural adjustments. Certainly business is saying quite clearly that it will take some years for the current financial volatility and uncertainty to unwind. It will unwind, but it will take time. We must, in the meantime, therefore, look at alternative markets, for example, in Africa, to an even greater extent. And the fact that we have been prescient enough in the past 2 years, as you know, government has mounted a number of trade and investment missions, of which one of the outcomes was we've joined BRICS. That's a very important strategic decision, very important long-term decision, which is important for our patterns of trade, and the private sector will need to also respond to fill up that framework as it unfolds over the next few years. Chair, the next point which I'd like to mention is I think I've touched on the issue of tax revenues, why we need growth, etc. I've dealt with the PPPs. The other issue is the issue of the labor laws. There, as you know, certain amendments to the labor laws, all I can say at the moment, are currently in headlock. There's quite a serious discussion going on, and we should have an outcome in the near future. The other issue is, I'll come back to the tangibility of some things, because I think, once again, it's important to know that although we have the new growth path, the state of our manufacturing industry and some of the issues that are relevant to their competitiveness or lack of it. I come back to the administered prices, because as fast as you're trying to do things on one side, it gets neutralized by that. But I'm coming back, and I certainly urge that when we're talking about the future of manufacturing in this country as an employment generator, which is also part of the new growth path, but was preceded by, of course, the IPAP 2, which is under Minister Davies. Very important proposals there, which affect the manufacturing sector, and which they are engaging in on a sectoral basis. It isn't a macro issue, it's a sectoral issue. Certain sectors have been identified as having growth potential, job potential, and both under IPAP 2 and the new growth path and the mini budget, this week already, Bursa has set up meetings with its manufacturing members to begin to address what these incentives mean, how can they access them, and how can they best ensure that they serve their purpose of strengthening the manufacturing sector and indeed strengthening job creation in that particular sector. So to that extent, when we talk about export promotion and what are we doing to find new markets, it's through those mechanisms that BRISA raises the level of awareness of its membership. And perhaps that feeds in, Chair, to another question about the smaller business person who is remote from BRISA. I should just explain that, of course, there are other employer bodies who belong to BRISA. We are an association of associations. And so we look to our members to ensure that they're in touch with their members and feed through to us what we need to know in order to mandate a view, whether it's in NEDLAC or talking to the Minister of Finance, or talking to you now today, it all goes through a process, through our internal structures, to say these represent the consensus view of business, and in some cases where there's a specialized area, such as the manufacturing sector or small business, for example, we are now under the new growth path seeking to develop what we've called, what I did in fact say earlier, an enterprise development accord which will mobilize and which will be the result of consultation with a cross-section of our members, including our smaller members. I think, Chair, the final point, I hope my notes, I really was impressed with all the questions and I hope that I have covered them all. There was just one other aspect I think I wanted to mention, and that was that at the end of the day, a lot of what Parliament is doing, I'm actually coming back to the earlier point, is the issue that it has got oversight over what is happening. That's what we hear today. You are exercising oversight over what the executive has decided. You've also exercised oversight over the views of stakeholders, which is why I'm here. And you're interrogating me and say, well, now, why do you take these views? And how does it contribute to the bigger debate? And I think that's a very important role. And I think it may, in fact, Chair, I'm hoping that maybe some of the areas, given the critical juncture at where we are now, and the emphasis on implementation, that may broaden some of the hearings that this committee has, that there are a couple of other buttons that need to be pressed to get the total view. That's the one thought I would leave with you, Chair. The other thought which occurred to me as I drove in this morning and thinking about the exchange of views that we would have here today, that in fact it could well be that, I mean, normally, I mean, of course this committee has many hearings, but the ones I know most about are usually the mini-budget and the main budget. And I'm just asking myself the question whether as part of your annual cycle, there may not have to be one or two other hearings to catch up with developments in a rapidly changing world, even if the sessions are not quite as extensive as this. Because quite clearly, there is an uncertain situation, there is volatility, there is change, all of which cannot be predicted. And the only way you can stay with the curve or even try and get ahead of the curve is by getting the information and the analysis of government and of other stakeholders, so that your oversight role is enriched and one can anticipate some of the developments instead of lagging behind them. So, Chair, I would simply say I hope I may not have done justice to everyone's points, but I think I have. I think I've covered most of the points, and I think what it really adds up to is, in fact, the collective challenge that we all share in putting South Africa where we think it ought to be for all its people.
Thank you, Professor Parsons, for that response and that reply. We look forward to the document you referred to give us insight into that information as well. Honourable members, it's 11 o'clock. We're going to break for tea for about 15 minutes, and then please be punctual. You want 5 minutes. Speedy Gonzalez, fine. We'll give you 6 minutes. But enjoy your tea, come back in 6 minutes, and that we proceed. Then the Honorable Taba will chair the second part of the agenda. We're still waiting for FFC to arrive. People's Budget Coalition is here. You can have tea with us. You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm going to be in this session for the last quarter to one. And then maybe this.